The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Last week, we brought you part one of a public community forum that was organized by Congressman Earl Blumenauer on the topic of ending the war on drugs. That forum was held August 1st in Portland, Oregon. Today, we're continuing with part two of that coverage. Our first speaker is Portland Police Bureau's Deputy Chief, Robert Day.
Standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. But then, of course, I'm not landing there in terms of the human cost that occurs and the harm that we know of for people entering and processing through the criminal justice system. Now, I say that, I want to be clear, I'm unapologetically proud to be a police officer, to be a Portland police officer, and to serve in this profession for nearly three decades. And the work that the men and women of the police bureau do, I'm also exceptionally proud of. 2017, we responded to almost 375,000 calls for service. About 45% of those calls would fall in the category of what we're talking about tonight in terms of, we call them disorder, so an unwanted person, suspicious behavior, things of that nature. For example, this morning as I was coming to work, we sent two officers to a call downtown here off of Main Street of a man sleeping on the sidewalk but his feet standing out in the traffic. Or the call yesterday of the man throwing knives at the tree over on the Springwater Corridor by Station 21 underneath the Hawthorne Bridge. What I don't want to understate is that the scope of this challenge is really significant. Our officers are responding to literally thousands and thousands of calls a month around behavior associated with, once again, the discussion we're having. And I'm not embarrassed or afraid to say that's not a police problem. But we are the best social outreach worker going, because 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can call somebody and the police will answer the phone. So we have become that default. And one of my criticisms would be, although I'm absolutely passionate about diversion and I'm absolutely passionate about looking for other options for this specific population we're talking about, is the system has changed behind the police, but it hasn't changed on the front end. We still call the police for these problems. And so the police have been given very few options. LEAD is an example of an option. But really, at the end of the day, when it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're standing there with the individual who's, for whatever reason, maybe broken out a window or defecated in the doorway of a business, and the business owner is standing there, and we're faced with what are our options, what are our choices, we know that, a 48th arrest is not going to make the difference here. We get it. But it's 2:30 in the morning. There's not a whole lot of people that are picking up the phone to come and intercede and create other options. And one way to resolve that situation, frankly, is to go to jail. And that brings a resolution for the moment and for the time. But it's equally frustrating. This isn't an excuse. I'm not making an excuse. But it's equally frustrating for the police officer who's writing their report and sees the person walk out of jail an hour and a half later, knowing that really we didn't solve anything. We didn't resolve anything. In fact, we've just created more cumbersome work in the process. Out of that 375,000 calls for service, Portland Police made less than 5% arrests in those calls. So, that's not an arrest-first mentality that we're talking about. But there is a role for law enforcement. I say all that. There is a role for law enforcement. There is a role for public safety in this conversation. I appreciate the Congressman's leadership and the conversation being led to less about somebody said it better than I do, but less about the addiction or the health issue we're talking about. But there still is a crime public safety nexus that we do have to be concerned about. And people are calling us a lot on a regular basis about these challenges. And so my encouragement is that we not only are focusing on the criminal justice system, but I think we're missing the mark with the police. We're looking at less jails. You're not going to get an argument on me about less jails, less jail space, less diversion opportunities, less addiction recovery. The Police Bureau has programs. We spend out of the Police Bureau budget millions of dollars around the service coordination team. We have officers dedicated to lead. I created a two-person homeless outreach team at Central Precinct, two police officers who spend their entire day doing homeless outreach work. We had 125 people in Central Precinct get into housing in the past year. According to Cascadia Behavioral Health, over 75% of them are still in housing. We have partnerships all across this city with many, many outreach providers and have a service-first attitude around these behavior problems that we get called to. You know, a person standing on a street corner screaming in downtown. It's not illegal to stand on a street corner and scream downtown. Yeah, we have to send two officers there because of the way that the system's designed. And they get there, and now they're faced with, you know, people upset about this, but behavior that's not necessarily illegal. We run to many, many, many of these. And another point that Congress made, if we can get a handle on some of this, you know, shudder to say we either need less police or maybe the police could be focusing on some of the more significant public safety challenges of the day. So you're not going to get an argument out of me tonight in terms of whether or not we should be going to the, whether or not, you know, this is where the arena the police are in, should be in. I don't think they are, but the reality is we are. And as a structure, as a system, you know, I'm open to suggestions and idea about how the police can get out of that business, out of that conversation. And, you know, I look forward to your input. I'm encouraged and by the turnout. I'm going to share, it's a risk, but I'm going to share on a personal note, Congressman. I want to thank you for your advocacy. It was 2 years ago this month that we lost our son to Ewing sarcoma. He was 15 years old. It's a horrible cancer that he fought bravely for 6 years. We went all over this country seeking treatment. Some of the best doctors in America, in Houston and Dallas and, of course, Dornbecker's, et cetera. It, late into his battle in 2016, my lovely bride, who was a passionate advocate for our boy, finally had the courage to come to me and tell me she'd been thinking about medical marijuana as an option for Sam. And I couldn't help but be stunned at the irony of 20-some-odd years of law enforcement, and now my bride is standing in front of me saying, I think this is an option for our son. And how tirelessly she worked to research, to understand, and really was forced to go out of state and speak with people in California and other places that were more progressive along this conversation. And I'm thinking, the irony here is amazing, right? I mean, I actually, you know, met with the city attorney, like, can I even do this? Can we even have this conversation? She's talking about, you know, going to California, bringing drugs up. I'm like, that is way across the line. But, you know, she figured it out, and we went through the system, and her and Sam got a medical marijuana card, and, you know, we had all these ATM debit purchases around the city where, you know, $100 here, $120. She learned the system. She learned how to have the conversations. I am losing my mind. At the same time, it doesn't make any difference because I'm faced with this stark reality. Unfortunately, you know, because of dosage requirements, I mean, we did use cannabis in, you know, the final stages of Sam's treatment. But I am a firm believer that in my lifetime, I hope that we move forward and see the benefit of that for our patients today. I think that because of the treatment, of the attitude towards that, towards cannabis over the many, many years in this country, we are behind. And, you know, to this day, we have very few regrets, and other than losing our son, of course, but one of the regrets is we didn't maybe start in that conversation earlier, that we explored diet, and once again, we saw great physicians all over the naturopaths, et cetera, but that's an area where we believe we wish we would have started earlier and maybe had created more hope and more opportunity. And we also wish that in spite of our phenomenal medical system and the amazing support we had, that there would have been more medical professionals willing to step up and say, hey, this is something maybe you should have thought about at an earlier time. So thank you for your advocacy in that. And, you know, you're going to have a supporter in me down the road if you want to have that conversation on a broader scale. So thank you.
That was Portland Police Bureau Deputy Chief Robert Day speaking at a public forum organized by Congressman Earl Blumenauer on August 1st. The topic was ending the war on drugs. And folks, apologies for audio quality issues. The venue itself had problems with its sound system. There was problems with proper electrics. The content, I hope you think, is worth it. Thank you for putting up with it. You are listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. I got a chance to ask Chief Day a couple of quick questions at the end of that forum. Here's that audio. The question, I guess, is, now, LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, it's an excellent program, but currently there are only 15 officers who are actually part of LEAD, at least according to Central City Concerns' Karen Kern. In fact, I talked to Karen and Deborah Cafori just a few weeks ago about it. How can we get more officers involved in the in that program? What can we do to convince those people at City Hall and the rest of the and the public, for that matter, to support expanding that program?
Right, and that really is just a capacity issue. You know, it's about resource allocation, and so, you know, LEAD, we've been doing it now for a year or two, I can't remember exactly, maybe 2 years, and so what I'd want to do is go back, look at the numbers and the results, and then, you know, if we can show that it's having that impact that we believe it is, then I think there's opportunity for expansion, you know, outside of the downtown core. It's really primarily been folks downtown and, you know, and a little bit over in Northeast, so the idea of trying to take that broader. It is also a little bit challenging because although the population are the same, you know, the encounters can be kind of different than like East County versus Old Town or something like that. So in the downtown core, for example, we have officers that are, it's easier to get around and they're kind of more concentrated. You start getting out into East County or you start getting into Northeast and St. John's, it's more spread out. So that's also a challenge in terms of, you know, getting the right amount of people in place to be able to address it and still take calls for service. But I'm certainly open to that conversation.
And as I was talking with Chair Cafori, it's not just a culture change within law enforcement to look at arrest as a last resort. It's also about changing the culture of our neighbors out there who seem to want to call the police, call 911 whenever someone offends them by their presence. You know, right. You handle it. You know, get, right. You know, and it's just, how on earth do we change some of the attitudes of people here to stop relying on law enforcement for just dealing with people who are offending them by their very presence? Yeah. I mean, it's...
Well, we have to continue to do an education campaign, you know, and really make people aware of other resources that are available to them. I'm never going to fault somebody for calling 911. I understand the frustration. I understand the difficulty that they're faced with. And but I think if we can do a better job of educating and, you know, both from a law enforcement perspective, but also as a community-wide effort to try and make sure people know that doesn't have to be your first call. And then, you know, challenging our civic leaders, both in the county and the city and the state, to provide those resources so they do have options other than us.
Chief Day, thank you so much, sir.
Good luck to you. Take care.
Thank you
very much. Good night. Thank you.
We're listening to audio from a community forum that was held August 1st in Portland, Oregon. The topic was ending the war on drugs. The forum was organized by Congressman Earl Blumenauer. There was time for members of the public to ask questions after the panelists had spoken. Let's listen in on one.
Hello, I'm Haven Wheelock, and I have had the honor and privilege of working with people who actively inject drugs, including methamphetamine and heroin, for the last 16 years. And I will honestly say I'm going to echo what I've heard from this panel, that we have seen a lot of shift in how we talk about drugs and how we talk about drug users. My concern is that we're not seeing a shift in how we fund services for people who are using drugs and how we fund services for access to medications. And I think I just had the wonderful privilege of going to Vancouver, BC, and getting to tour some of their drug user services in BC. Sorry, I'm going to cry. And it was just really enlightening how they took on this really holistic four-pillar approach that involved equally funding prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and enforcement, and really prioritized all four of those things in equal fashion to save lives. And we're currently dealing with a crisis like we've never seen. I personally lost 8 people I knew in July to not all overdose, but drug-related illness. And I'm wondering how we get there. How do we move from talking about just treatment or just prevention or just enforcement? And how do we really engage this idea that people are using drugs in our community and we don't want them to die? That's all.
Panelists? Do you got something, Joe?
It's like a game show. First of all, thank you, Haven, because I've watched you like sort of carry this torch in many ways and in many states and in many forums and now at a national and international level. So you're a huge asset to our community, and I really appreciate all the work that you do. I'll give my typical sort of, now that I'm an administrator, my administrative wonky answer, which is, again, we can't, it's not one size fits all, and it's not a separate solution for everybody else. And I think in many places, whether it's treatment or housing, or we funded in silos and we supported in silos, and we lose the opportunity, and I think this comes from the feds to the state to our local government, we lose the opportunity to say, not all people who use drugs are the same, and they're not all different, how do they hang together in different types of groups and communities that then we can deeply understand and bear resources upon? Because you're, a pregnant woman with opioid use disorder who's using heroin and wants to get her kid out of foster care needs a different set of services and law enforcement and support than, you know, somebody who is 60 years old and has cirrhosis from alcohol use disorder and just doesn't want to live in the hospital or on the street. So I think it's incumbent on us to be deeply curious and relentless in understanding who different groups of people are and then how we align and leverage the scarce resources that we have to not only help that person, but to produce a kind of, this sounds sort of a global humanistic return on investment in terms of people staying alive, less incarceration costs, less unnecessary healthcare costs. So I know that's wonky, but I think we tend to, as you're saying, drive towards these different siloed solutions. And I deeply believe that the answer is at the level of the community.
I just want to add, because then we're going to have to take one quick question, then let Congressman Blumenauer wrap up. But one really practical thing, as someone who's been trying to do reform for at least a quarter century now, is take lawmakers, let's get lawmakers like Congressman Blumenauer, our federal lawmakers and our state lawmakers, up to see that, because it is hard to have a vision. I'm guessing you cried for that, because the same way I saw the Missouri juvenile justice system, you couldn't believe it was possible and how transformative it would be. And I think we have to get our decision makers, also our police officers, our caseworkers, to see what's possible, because it's hard to imagine sometimes. So let's take one more quick question, and then we'll let...
I just wanted to follow up. I really appreciate your question, and I do think like figuring out the next steps is the challenge, but there's two things, building on what just Shannon said, is that all this is, we created it. It's all man-made, we created it. We can imagine something different very easily. So I think now is the time to be bold, you know, and put out every idea that you have, engage with lawmakers, engage with law enforcement, engage with social service providers, get them to see examples of how things can be different, because it can be. I mean, this is not how it has to be. But just to push back on your comment as far as that we have made progress in the language and how we talk about drug use, in the field that I work in, and primarily with people who are intersecting with the criminal justice system, most of the policies are driven by fear and hysteria and the combination of politics of fear and anger. And the language in which we use to describe people in this country right now, in this state, and how we're, the level of dehumanization that's occurring, it's a real thing, and that does not allow us to actually take those next steps. So I think we're still at that initial conversation about how to talk about this, how to talk about the folks that are being impacted by this war on drugs as our neighbors, as our community members, as individuals that we need to take care of. So I think we're still there, and when I see all the policies and the decision makings that largely sort of push the criminal justice system, how they're so disconnected from science and research and evidence-based practices, and how it's all based on fear and hysteria and just, you know, locking people up because we just don't like them, or we should be scared of them or something like that. It's phenomenal, and I think it's a battle that we're still in the middle of. And please keep pushing on the language thing and the values thing.
Hi, my name is Dave. I've been working in the community justice field for 21 years here, and I think we definitely need to do some bold and progressive things that we're not doing. I'm very familiar with the LEAD program. Like Chief Deputy Day said, you are the front line. I would rather not see you as the front line. I think we need to make, we as a community need to expect more from our community and expect other people like Project Respond and put more funding into mental health so we can have mental health do the work instead of police. When we see a report from earlier in the summer from the Oregonian saying that one out of every two police arrests from Portland police is homeless, I think that's unacceptable. I think we've spent an hour and a half here and we have not talked about the most powerful person in the entire criminal justice system, and that person is not here. That's Rod Underhill from the District Attorney's Office. There needs to be some changes on the front line and changes on what we decide to convict or not.
This public forum on ending the war on drugs was organized by Congressman Earl Blumenauer. It's only right that we give Earl the last words.
And thank you all for being here. I appreciate the passion and the range of things that people were involved with. This is an area where part of it is reflecting priorities in our community. We need to do a better job of reflecting these issues and concerns as priorities. What is the energy that's moving forward in terms of ballot measures that are out there? We've got a housing one coming, but we have lots of other initiatives that people throw out that really don't speak to this fundamental disconnect. And I think it needs to be more deeply embedded as a priority for business, for individuals, for churches. I mean, people, I think, are aware, but I don't think it's been translated into action. And one other area that I don't want to go all wonky on you, but one of the things I've attempted to do repeatedly in sessions for the last 5 years is to understand the costs of failure. How much police resources are caught up with things that you really aren't equipped to be able to deal with meaningfully other than just quiet the disturbance and hope that doesn't spin? We still are having people in emergency rooms who can't be treated, but we just don't have any other place for them. How much does it cost OHSU to deal with the dysfunction that you're talking about in terms of people who have substance abuse or housing, who have inadequate health? The cost of failure follows us. And it is something that I personally have been attempting to get people to quantify. What does it cost Multnomah County to be prosecuting lower level drug offenses that are not probably going to change behaviors and get in the way of other criminal justice activities? I think that this is an area we really need to insist a better accountability of what does it cost the school district, because there isn't this appropriate family support. And just like law enforcement, teachers end up being social workers, mental health counselors, dealing with health, substituting for parents. And it's no wonder that maybe they're trying to have a disruptive student moved out, because they're at the end of their rope with 35 students. And it seems to me that if we do a better job of being able to identify and segregate the costs of failure, I think we'll be able to do a better job of reallocating on the front lines, be able to have the peer counselors that you want, be able to have a mental health professional on site, to be able to have some counseling support in schools for teachers that are spun out, have people who can help parents who are unable to cope with a kid out of control. I mean, I don't mean to rationalize this, but I just think that the context of what people are facing with now is so much more complex and heated. And in an age of Twitter and really nasty, vile communication and politics that make you feel like you want to take a shower, this compounds. The high school that I went to in East Portland, when I went there 1,000 years ago, there were 5 minorities. Now, I'm not talking about black and Hispanic. I'm talking about 5 minorities. 2 African Americans, 1 Hispanic, and 2 Asians. And now there are 57 countries of origin that they're trying to deal with. So, I mean, it's breathtaking in terms of some of the complexities that are reflected in our community, people that are coming, people who feel under threat. But I hope, A, that we're able to provide some context. We think about it, and we try and push some of our priorities. And I hope that there's a sense of accountability to identify the costs of failure and see if we can't segregate and redirect. If we can save money for Kaiser and OHSU and the police department and the school district, to be able to invest in that frontline activity for housing and treatment, I think that's part of the solution, because I'll go to my grave thinking that we're wasting money on failure that could largely help, if we were able to direct it properly, to help prevent that. But thank you for caring. Thank you for braving the traffic and the heat. We appreciate your observations. If you want to share with us thoughts, you know, I know, Doctor, you will. I've got 2 of your letters on my desk. We welcome further thoughts and observations you would share with us. Thank you very much.
That was Earl Blumenauer wrapping up a public forum on ending the war on drugs, which he organized and held in Portland, Oregon on August 1st. And that's all the time we have this week. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.